This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Kate Spencer.
And we're not experts.
But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
And we want you to call us.
Please call us. Please do. Please call Can you tell us? We're self-quarantined? We miss people.
Our voicemail number is 781-591-0390. And you can also email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
We also have so many amazing discussions happening in our Facebook group, which you can join. It's facebook.com/groups/forever35podcast. We have so many spinoff groups to join. And the password for the main group is serums. So don't forget that.
And you know, if you like the show, we always appreciate a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend, mention us on social media. We're just, you know, we just crave it all.
We do. Yep. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast, on Twitter at Forever 35 Pod. And anything we talk about, any products or items we mention, can be found on our website, forever35podcast.com.
And I just want to put in a plug for our new daily show, Here For You, which is a 20-minute show where we just kind of try to talk through what's been going on in the world and give people something every day to help take their mind off things. How you doing?
So, speaking of, you know, today is okay. I had a nice, you know, my kids are home for the foreseeable future. Months, I'm assuming right now. And it was really interesting. We were just walking our dog and I just had this moment where I turned to my 9-year-old and I was like, I'm really glad we get this time together. And, you know, I think I've been so clouded by all of the worry and anxieties, both for my family and for my community and the world, that it's been hard for me to like look at the things that I truly appreciate about this really effed up experience we're all in. And, you know, that is this kind of like unmuted times with my kids where like nobody else is around. We're not rushing to go to dance class or like go to somebody's house. We're just together all the time.
Yeah, I have been thinking a lot about this.
Like we'll probably never have an opportunity like this in our lifetimes again. So like, again, I'm not trying to like make light of the situation we're in, but it's just kind of an interesting thing that I am appreciating about this time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of trying to like reconcile myself with acknowledging the privilege of feeling that there are benefits to being in this self-isolation, if that makes sense.
Go on.
While also, you know, while acknowledging the very real hardship that this is also causing for so many people, and also that it has also been a really anxious time for me and I assume for most people as well. And that, like, all of those feelings can kind of coexist, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's actually reminded me a lot of grieving in a lot of ways, how we can still like laugh and have fun when really horrible things are happening. And I just don't think they need to be mutually exclusive, but sometimes it can feel weird, you know, like to like we recognize we're in a deeply troubled crisis where people are dying and being hurt and so much hardship is happening. But also there are these weird moments that from that, these amazing kind of organic, joyful things can happen. And I agree, it's hard to reconcile that. And it's just one of these like weird things about life that fascinate me.
Yeah, totally. So what else have you been doing?
I've been really invested in popping an ingrown hair, Dory. That's what I've been doing.
You are speaking my language.
I know. Someone was like, wow, it sounds like you've got a really exciting thing to work on during quarantine. And I was like, yes, I do. I have a very bad ingrown hair, Dory. I don't know how it happened. It is red. It is tender. And it's my project.
Can I ask how you've been addressing it?
Well, for about a week, I didn't even notice. And then one day I was like, whoa, this is in my pubic region. I don't know what, like, I don't shave. I don't know where it just happened. So I finally noticed it and I was like, okay, I'm just going to let that live and just be. And then it kind of burst recently. Is this TMI, listeners? No, TMI, no. Alert? TMI alert? TMI alert. And then I was like, ooh, what do I do now? You know, like, and I'm not going to go to the doctor because that's just not an option right now for non-urgent things. So, you know, like maybe I'd go to the dermatologist. I don't know. What is a doctor going to do? So I'm just kind of letting it play out with the warm compress with some Neosporin. But like, I have not been able to get the hair out and I don't want to irritate it further. We're just kind of coexisting together, me and this ingrown hair. And it's just a real, I don't know, ingrown hairs, like I they don't happen as much for me anymore. So it's just kind of like an interesting project I have going on right now.
I'm excited for you.
I mean, me too. I hope I don't make it worse. I'm just mostly trying not to let it get infected.
Yeah. So there's no sign of the actual hair.
No, but like I did post a photo of it to my like main mom Facebook group that I'm in because I was like, I need someone to help me on this one. And people have been guiding me on how to try to get the hair out, like including like people who are actual medical professionals. But so far, Dory, I don't know where it is.
No
it's
luck.
In there. No
and
luck.
And you have a pair of very sharp tweezers?
No. I mean, I kind of have a pair, but like, I mean, I need to sterilize them before I go digging around with them.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, this is scintillating drama. Literally.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, that was a pun. That was a pun.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't even weigh in on this because I don't think my methods are sanctioned.
You go rogue on those ingrown hairs.
I feel like I go rogue and I wouldn't want to encourage any bad behavior in you or any of our listeners.
Yeah. And again, like, this is also something that I'm like, well, I've got nothing but time right now, so I'm being more patient with it, I think, because I'm, you know,
yes.
I'm warm compressing. I took a bath last night hoping that might help, but it didn't. So
yeah,
I will certainly keep you up to date.
Please do. I feel very invested.
I will say, Dory, the other thing is I'm trying not to use it as an outlet for my stress and anxiety because I've been talking about face picking, and I had actually talked to my therapist about it because I was really going at it on like on my arms and like scanning my body, like kind of rubbing over my body to kind of feel around for things to pick. So I have been really trying to kind of consciously just examine that and be aware of it. So I also have to like actively not let this be a thing. You know what I mean?
Yep. 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 Yep.
Can I tell you one more thing, Dory?
Yes, always.
Okay. I finally conducted my first, non-sanctioned Vaseline alternative study, and I have some opinions.
Great. Let's hear them.
Okay. So these are based on some listener recommendations that I was able to easily purchase online. There have been more recommendations. I will keep exploring them, but I wanted to give you my first results. All right. So I tried Waxaline, which is kind of comes in like a lip a lip balm. I tried Lana Lips, and then I tried Alba Botanica Unpetroleum Jelly. Here are is my opinion. I hated Waxaline.
Okay.
Just that's it. Period. Waxaline was not for me. I appreciate the recommendation, but it just it felt kind of drying and sticky. I liked Lana Lips for my lips. It was fine. I liked it. I will definitely probably like keep it in my purse and keep using it. But the Alba Botanica Unpetroleum Jelly, I'm going to go as far as to say that it's a rave.
Wow. Okay.
And not only do I like it on my lips in place of Vaseline, though, to be honest, nothing's going to stop me from using Vaseline. I still like Vaseline better. What I really like this for is on my hands.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Which are, I think, like many people, super dry right now from so much washing. So every night I have been putting this Alba Botanica Unpetroleum Jelly on my hands. And I even put it on these dry spots on my cheeks last night. And I just got to say, like, if you've got dry hands, this is a winner. And I know a lot of us do right now.
Yeah. I really like Alba Botanica's products. So I'm pleased that they had your favorite.
Yes, and I ordered that online, but I know you can, and look, obviously shopping right now is a whole thing, so get it if you want to, wherever you can, but I did notice it was at Whole Foods, but I ordered mine online, so there you go.
Okay, good to know.
Anyway, on that note, Dory, note, exciting, I've got an ingrown hair, and I've got a new Vaseline-esque product.
Your best life.
I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to kind of find the things that bring me some sense of like routine and joy and normalcy, you know?
Yes.
How have you been holding up this week?
You know, I'm okay. I've been trying to check in with friends and family more often. My two best friends from college and I did a Zoom call the other day, and that was really nice. One of them is in New York and one of them lives in Istanbul, so we don't get to see each other very much anyway. And it was kind of nice that this situation gave us an excuse to have this virtual hang.
Yeah.
Which is something we've never done before, even though we totally could have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have been talking to friends more too, and there are people I wish we talked to every day, and we weren't finding reasons to do it. And so now here we are in this time doing it, and it's been very interesting to be kind of pushed in that direction.
Yeah. I've been calling my parents every day, FaceTiming with Henry, with them. I had previously been calling them like once a week, maybe twice a week. And so it's been nice. I feel like I can check in on them and they get to see Henry. And, you know, my dad's almost 75. He's 74. My mom is turning 70 soon. Like, my dad's not leaving the house. I called them last night. And my mom told me that my dad has been doing social distancing from her.
Okay. I mean,
like, he's been maintaining 6 feet of distance between them. And so when he got on the line, I was like, Dad, you know, you don't have to do that, like, within the house, unless you think mom has been exposed. And he was like, I don't think she's been exposed. And I was like, okay, I mean, I think you're probably safe. Like, I appreciate your newfound efforts to be safe, but this seems extreme.
Yeah, because I feel like the idea is that the people you are quarantining with, you're kind of essentially, like, if somebody is sick with coronavirus, you could get it, but like you're essentially become a unit, right?
Yes,
like
exactly.
A quarantining unit.
Exactly. So I just that was kind of funny to me.
I love that. That's a very dad thing to do.
It's a very my dad thing to do. I was like, oh my God. And then he was like, did you tell her to like get upset with me? I was like, no, she just mentioned it. So you know, as I was saying before, I have been seeing some of the nice things about this period of isolation. You know, we're cooking more, we're spending more time together. I've gotten into online exercise, which was something that like I'd been meaning to do for so long and just had never done. I'm going on a lot more walks, but you know, I'm also trying to like be honest with myself about the things that I do miss, and like allow myself to mourn those, like seeing people in real life. I miss not being anxious, like completely anxious every time my husband or I go to the grocery store. And I miss going to restaurants. I miss taking Henry to his playgroup. I'm stressed about the global economy and whether this is the end of life as we know it. And, you know, I think just I'm trying to allow myself to feel those things while also acknowledging that there are some things that are kind of nice about it.
Well, like, this is a real time of grief, right? Like, and fear, grief over loss of life, over like actual human life, over loss of the way people live their lives. I mean, I think I was feeling like very deep sorrow. I think I've already mentioned this on an episode, but of my kids and their teachers, like missing their teachers. And and I don't, that surprised me. I was like, why am I missing school? Like, I'm sad for them to have lost that experience. And I'm thinking a lot about how they will remember this time, you know, and but that was something I was like, why am I like crying about them not seeing, going to their classrooms? I don't, it just felt, I don't know. There's a lot.
Well, because it's like, it's something that was, that we almost took for granted before.
Yes, totally. I mean, 100% did take for granted. And I also think, you know, there is this feeling of you want, even if you don't feel okay or you're anxious, you want other people around you to not feel that. Like, you want to protect them from that experience, totally. I think, a little bit. So, and I feel that way about like friends and family, not just my own children. It's a strange time. It also makes you, or it makes me appreciate so much what I do have. And like, I notice I have been looking at nature a lot more and like just feeling so grateful that I can like walk outside every morning and breathe in the air. You know, I mean, there is that remembrance of all that we do have and what we're so lucky to have. So
yes, I agree.
It's stuff. I feel like this is if we make it out, you know, make it through, it will be a huge growing and learning experience. But it's still fucking scary as all fuck.
Yeah, and it's like, it's so hard to picture what that is going to look like.
Yes. And, you know, there's so many other fears and concerns that like can go without mentioning, but so much that I'm sure our listeners are experiencing too. So I don't know. It's tough.
It's really, really tough. Well,
that's why I've got this ingrown hair. Got my ingrown hair to distract me.
Thank God.
I keep looking at it while I'm recording, by the way. If we were in person, I wouldn't be doing this, but because you're not here, I keep pulling up my skirt, pushing up my underwear, and looking at my ingrown hair.
Wow. We should probably record remotely forever.
Until this hair is resolved.
Yes.
What if, like, we're able to start seeing people again, but my ingrown hair is still going on, so we cannot meet in person until it's done?
I mean, that could happen. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking with the amazing author and podcaster, Dani Shapiro, about her most recent book, Inheritance, and her podcast, Family Secrets, and being in isolation. And she is just so wonderful. And we were so, so excited to be able to talk to her. So we'll be right back. I am the first to admit that gift giving is not easy for everyone. It's taken me a long time to become like a halfway decent gift giver. But what I have learned is that the best way to win the gift giving game is to gift memories.
Ooh.
Yes. And you know how you do that, Kate?
I'm ready. I'm listening.
The Aura digital frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
We have gifted this to many people.
And when you gift this, your family will love looking back on childhood memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating the frame with new photos, so it's really the gift that keeps on giving. It's super easy to set up. It takes literally 2 minutes. You download the app, you set up the Wi-Fi, boom, you're good to go.
Yep.
We have given this to my parents. We've given this to Matt's parents.
Same.
It's so easy because you can add photos from the app like anytime you want. And also, like, my brother has the app, so he can add photos from his family. My sister has the app, so she can add photos. My parents also have it, so they also add their own photos.
That is one of the coolest parts, I think, of the Aura Frame, is that everybody can contribute.
Yes.
I love that about, we have two Aura Frames in our house. I have one in my office and one in our family room. And my kids love it.
Do they have the same pictures on them?
No, they have different pictures.
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe I should get one from my office.
I'm looking at a picture of my children right now.
Right. Interesting. Putting that away for later.
Store that.
Yes. The Aura app lets you share photos more securely than with email, which is what many other digital frames require. And also, then you're not taking up your email storage. So, win-win. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Forever 35 listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com. Use code FOREVER35 at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that, like, what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But, like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just, like, so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And, like, within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, look, I don't know about you, but when I hold on to some negative feelings, it really starts to impact my day to day. I get a little snippy and short with the people in my life. Things start to really feel overwhelming. And look, it's just generally not great for me or for the people that I am interacting with. And I do find that my time in therapy is a real safe space to get those things off my chest and figure out how to work on and work through the things that are weighing on me or maybe weighing on you. For example, like, I have actually really been working on mindfulness in therapy.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Easier said than done, but that's the work, right? Like, just learning about kind of like really creating a breathing practice and paying attention to my physical body and my feelings. Therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and to learn productive coping skills. If you're thinking about trying therapy,
try BetterHelp. It's convenient and accessible anywhere because it is 100% online. All it takes to get started is filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you're not vibing with the therapist, you can switch at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/forever35 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/forever35.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, Dory, have I ever told you, what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh, that sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they manage to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
Our guest today is Danny Shapiro. Danny, we are so excited to have you on Forever 35.
I am thrilled to be with you both.
And we are just going to read your bio and then we will get into our conversation. So Danny is the author of the instant New York Times bestselling memoir, Inheritance, which was published in January 2019 by Knopf and recently came out in paperback. And her other books include the memoirs Hourglass, Still Writing, Devotion, and Slow Motion, and five novels, including Black and White and Family History. Along with teaching writing workshops around the world, Danny has taught at Columbia and New York University and is the co-founder of the Sirenland Writers Conference in Positano, Italy. And in February of 2019, Danny launched an original podcast, Family Secrets, in collaboration with iHeartMedia, an iTunes Top 10 podcast. The series features stories from guests who, like Danny, have uncovered life-altering and long-hidden secrets from their families' past. And it is a wonderful podcast that I highly recommend everyone listen to. So Danny, we are talking to you kind of in the midst of a period of great upheaval. We are all self-quarantined. We're all recording from our homes and just kind of want to know how you're doing.
Thanks. I want to know how you guys are doing too. I mean, it's just such a It's unlike anything that any of us have experienced in our lives. I mean, there's just new language around it and new feelings around it. And, you know, look, I'm okay. You know, you're okay. We're sitting here making a podcast today, but it's a very unsettling time for all of us. I mean, I'm sitting here in the basement of my home in Connecticut. Typically, I would probably be in a recording studio to be recording a podcast, but I'm in my son's old playroom surrounded by like little boy paraphernalia. He's 20 now. So we haven't gotten around to kind of, renovating this and turning it into something more grown up. And yeah, my house is full. You know, my husband's home, my son is home. And everybody's kind of maintaining social distance and self-quarantining because they were both out in the world up until very recently. So it's, yeah, very, very strange. Very strange not to be able to physically be with people and literally to touch people. I wonder what that's going to do, you know, to all of us when we come out the other side of this.
Yeah, it's really disorienting.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned the physical. My husband worked away from home for months at a time recently. And one thing he said to me was how kind of like he longed for a hug because he wasn't like with anyone who he hugged. He was with all the people he worked with, and how that like lack of physical contact was really hard. And I think it's interesting you note that.
Well, I mean, one of the things in my circumstances is my son just came back from Europe. He was on a semester abroad, and you know, he came into the house and I hadn't seen him in months, and we are a huge hugging family. We are huggers. And we couldn't hug each other because he had been, you know, all over London and all over Europe. And very much the wisdom is no matter how much you want to, like, you know, don't do that for 14 days. Like let that period of time go by. And then my husband came back, who also I haven't seen in weeks and weeks. He was in LA making a film, and we're like maintaining 6 feet of distance between us. It's very, we're kind of like dancing around the house in this strange way. And, you know, very much with the feeling of it's temporary. And I mean, hopefully it's temporary, and it's possible to do anything if you know that there's, you know, an end date for it. 14 days from now, we'll be able to all be sitting on the sofa together.
Right. And, you know, one thing I was thinking about is that, you know, you are a writer and a podcaster as we are, and we're kind of used to working alone. We're used to being solitary, but we're kind of not used to being this alone. And what you just pointed out about not being able to touch your husband or your son, I think really highlights that. And I'm wondering, what are some of the things you're doing to, I guess, mitigate that for yourself?
I think, you know, I have had several longtime practices, which are more difficult to you know, be in the ritual and the habit of things that are, you know, healthy and, you know, where we're really taking care of ourselves. It's a lot harder in the midst of a crisis, but I do meditate every day. I try to meditate first thing in the morning. That's been my habit. That's been my practice because it's helpful to do it at the same time every day. But I've found lately that I'll check my phone, and which I never do first thing in the morning. I've always had a discipline, which is I'm going to meditate first, and email can wait, and I'm not going to go online. I'm going to have this little oasis before starting my day. But when you reach for your phone in the morning now, and there are text alerts, and you see them on your home screen, whether you want to or not, and there, you know, you're sort of off to the races seeing these coronavirus alerts and, you know, different kinds of news alerts. And it can, I mean, for me, that's really super challenging. Like I'll end up being caught up in reacting to the day, reacting to the news, reacting to what's going on before I've done anything to fully center myself, you know, in the present moment, which is what meditation and yoga, which is also a practice that I've had for a long time, are all about. Ultimately, they're tools, technologies in a way that allow us to be here now, not leaning into the future, not leaning back into the past. I mean, I think I am like many people in that I'm worried about, you know, where is this going to go? Catastrophizing, you know, wondering, you know, how many weeks, how many months, what is it going to look like? Nobody knows. So there's this lack of control and this desire for control and the anxiety that comes with that. And the possibility of just having these moments of, you know what, I'm right now, I'm breathing in and breathing out. Right now, my family is under my roof. This moment, or as my dear friend, the great mindfulness teacher, Sylvia Boorstein, has this beautiful little meditation, which goes, may I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. And just with each breath, may I meet this moment fully. In other words, may I just be here for this moment, whatever it is. May I meet it as a friend? Can I soften into whatever it is that's happening. And even just a few minutes of that practice is an oasis, and allows us to remember, I don't know. I mean, there are other, I think about the people who have other difficulties going on in their lives right now, where the coronavirus is the backdrop of the world, but you know, everyone has their own, we all have our own lives and whatever is going on in our lives. And I'm just always conscious of that, you know, we think we know what to be worried about, or we think we, you know, we sort of think about the future as a way really of trying to control it, when in fact we don't know. And what we have is just right here and right now.
Oh, even just listening to you talk about meditation made me feel bad. How did you come to that practice? It sounds like it's been a part of your life for a long time.
Yeah, when my son was little, he was probably around 5 years old, he started asking those kinds of questions that little kids often ask. And he would ask me, what do you believe in? Do you believe in God? You know, what do you think happens when we die? Where do we go? You know, those kinds of existential questions, spiritual questions that kids ask. And when he started asking me those questions, I realized that I had totally opted out of thinking about anything pertaining to a spiritual life, because I was raised in a religious home and I rebelled against it. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. It just felt rigid and stultifying, and I just rebelled as soon as I could, and I really never looked back. But then now I had this little kid who was asking me like the big, deep questions. And I realized I wanted to be a mom who opted into thinking about the questions, you know, where the responses I was giving him weren't, you know, wasn't like the smorgasbord, you know, well, some people believe this and some people believe that. And I wanted to be able to talk to him about what I believed. And I just, So I, because I'm a writer and that's how I explore just about everything, I was actually in the middle of a yoga practice one day, and the word devotion floated across my like field of vision, almost like this neon sign. And I realized with some degree of horror that my next book was going to be about this, that I needed to like opt into asking the questions. And so I wrote this memoir called Devotion that came out about 10 years ago. It's hard to believe it's that long ago. And in order to write it, I had to live it. I mean, I wanted to write it so that I could live it in some way. And so I kind of without ever leaving my backyard, I just started saying yes to things. Like, I was in a yoga class, and at the end of the yoga class, the teacher, when everybody was lying there in Shavasana, the teacher read a poem, and the poem really struck me. So I looked it up. I followed signs. I looked up the poem, and the only place I could find it was by ordering this book about yoga philosophy by this writer and yoga philosopher named Stephen Cope. And I bought the book. And unlike many times that we buy books and they just pile up and we don't get to them, I started reading it. I didn't just flip through it looking for this poem. I started reading it. And it was like a mind-blowing, life-altering, really powerful book. And it was one of those books I was carrying around with me and dog-earing. And a few weeks later, I was at one of these literary festivals about an hour from my home. And the other writer sitting next to me, you know, where all our books are piled up in front of us and people were milling about, it was a benefit, leaned over to introduce himself to me. And he said, "Hi, Steve Cope." And oh, wow. I was like, holy shit. I leaned into my, like, I pulled his book out of my bag and I was like, you're changing my life. And he then was teaching a workshop at Kripalu, which is a yoga and meditation center in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. And, you know, I had a little kid at home. It felt completely, it had always felt like a self-indulgent thing to do, to say like, I'm going to go on a retreat. leave my husband and son. How can they possibly fend for themselves for a few days? They won't eat, you know, like, I can't do this. But suddenly my new friend, Stephen Cope, was leading this retreat. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go. And he was leading it with another mindfulness teacher named Sylvia Borstein. And that was a completely life-changing weekend for me. I met Sylvia, who became not only my teacher, but a very dear friend who I talk to multiple times a week these days. She's in her 80s and she lives in the Bay Area. And so this is how it kind of evolved. It was like by following the next right thing, like being awake to the next right thing. And that kind of, you know, there's this beautiful Sabbath prayer that I came upon when I was actually even years before, something that I had written down and I had on an index card above my desk. And the beginning of it goes, the days pass and the years vanish and we walk sightless among miracles. And I just remember, like, I didn't want to walk sightless among miracles. I wanted, and you know, we can't be awake all the time. It's impossible. We would burn out. We would just, you know, explode. It's too much. But, you know, having that, and the flip side too, though, I've got to say, is I think it can be when you are awake and alive to everything that's going on, it can become really hard and painful when what's going on is really hard and painful. So it has its complexities, but that's how I came to those practices. Sorry, long story.
No,
I love it.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I'm wondering, for people who maybe have not embarked on this spiritual journey, how would you advise someone to get into meditation if that's something they want to pursue, especially now?
That's a great question. You know, when my book Devotion came out, I was amazed by how many people would say to me, oh, I'm a bad meditator. I'm a bad meditator. I can't meditate. And I was like, what does it mean to be a bad meditator? Oh, well, I can't stop my racing thoughts. I can't quiet my mind for even like 1 or 2 seconds at a time. And the thing I would say is that is meditation. None of us can quiet our thoughts, especially now, for more than 1 or 2 seconds at a time. But the act of meditating is to actually notice, oh, I'm thinking. Okay. I'm going to come back to the breath now. I'm going to take a breath in. Notice I'm taking a breath in. Exhale. Notice I'm taking a breath, you know, letting my breath out. Oh, there's a thought again. Oh, without any judgment or self-recrimination, just noticing. And then you start after a little while to notice what those thoughts are. Like, oh, every time I have a thought, it's anxiety about the future. Okay. All right. I'm going to go back to the breath. And then if you do that just for a little bit every day, you just start to know your own mind better, which is so incredibly useful for everything that we do, whether it's as parents or as, you know, in our work or for people doing creative work or just, you know, living our lives, just knowing the contents of our minds. That's all it is. It's not about being in some blissed out Zen state of nirvana that is unattainable. It's got nothing to do with that. It's just noticing the patterns of your mind. And if you sit for even just a couple of minutes, you'll notice that. And then there also are all these technologies, like technology can be so overwhelming at times, but there also are these various technologies that are so supportive of, you know, like podcasts, right? Of living a more connected life, a more meaningful life, a more informed life. And one of those, for me, is this app called Insight Timer. That's a free app, that has all of these actual guided meditations by hundreds and hundreds of different teachers. So if you need support, or there have definitely, I mean, I prefer to meditate with either just like sort of background, like the sound of crickets and a stream running, or silence. But there have definitely been times in my life where I'm too overwhelmed to do that. And so I'll listen to, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh or, you know, Sharon Salzberg or Jack Kornfield, all these great meditation teachers just guide me. It's like being in a class with somebody who's just taking you on a little journey of guided meditation.
You know, you've written fun. So much about about very different, challenging, traumatic experiences in your life. And I would love to know, in addition to any kind of technology or podcasts, what kind of books or TV shows do you turn to when things are challenging? Do you find comfort in it? And you mentioned Stephen Cope, who's amazing. Yeah. Is there, do you have like a comfort food, a pop culture comfort food?
I mean, my pop culture comfort food is more like really absorbing TV, you know, stories that I can binge watch and kind of get swept up into. Ones lately, I've been watching the latest season of Homeland, there's just a TV show called Manifest that is very suspenseful. And I find it can be really helpful to just take a break and just watch something that's not like, you know, super, you know, meaningful. That's just kind of, you know, entertainment, really well done entertainment. With books, I find I'm much more comforted by beautiful language. I read a lot of poetry. When I need solace, I go back to certain writers whose work I love and that I've loved for a long time and reread them. Like Virginia Woolf, I go back to rereading her work when I need a sense of perspective. I think it can be really helpful to have a historical perspective right now about this moment that we're in, you know, that there were people living through really hard things before we were born. You know, Virginia Woolf wrote a lot during World War II, when, you know, her city was under attack. And there's something about, for me, that I find comforting about placing myself in the span of time, because you also realize that people get to the other side of things very often.
Mm-hmm. Danny, I'm wondering if we can talk about inheritance, which for people who are not familiar with it, tells the story of learning that the man you knew as your dad was not your biological father and finding the man who was, not to give too much of a spoiler, but, and I'm just wondering what's your relationship like with your biological family now, and what was their response to the book?
Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, it's funny, just hearing you say that, when I realized that discovery I made is only a few years ago, and so much has happened. You know, I was quote unquote interviewing my son the other day because the PBS NewsHour chose Inheritance for their book club that's coming up, and they ask the writers to do little projects that go up on their website and Facebook and all of that. And as one of the projects, I thought, I'm going to interview my son. I have a conversation with him that I'll then share with them about what it was like to discover that his grandfather was a different biological, you know, it was a completely different human being, right?
Yeah.
And he said something yesterday when we were doing this that really struck me, which was he said, I feel like my family expanded. I don't feel like now granted, he didn't know my dad, so it wasn't a loss for him. My dad died before he was born. So it wasn't actually a loss of a human being who he loved as it was. I mean, for me, it was shocking and it initially felt like a loss. Because I had never known that that was the case. And I felt betrayed and I felt confused and I felt adrift, which I don't feel at all anymore, I should say. But like my biological father, who was a sperm donor. I mean, there are no spoilers, by the way, for, you know, for all of your listeners. It doesn't seem to matter at all whether you know the facts or you don't. I mean, my friends, when they read Inheritance when it came out, my friends who intimately knew the story would call me up and say, I was up until 2 o'clock in the morning to find out what happened.
It's like, yeah, I mean, I should say, totally. I knew the broad strokes of your story and I was still riveted by your book. Yeah. So
Thank you. But so, I mean, my biological father was a sperm donor, which was a shocking thing to discover in the middle of my life. And I was able to track him down very, very stunningly easily. And we had, you know, it's a very complicated thing that many people are facing these days of suddenly somebody reaching out who's a complete stranger and saying, I think you're my biological parent, or I think you're my biological half sibling. You know, it's this kind of stunning moment of, wait a minute, I thought I knew. I mean, one thing we're generally pretty sure of if we grow up thinking that we're in our own biological family is, you know, the parameters of that. And then suddenly that's kind of exploded wide open. And so it was initially very challenging. I think he was shocked and threatened. I think as everyone is in those circumstances, very much a feeling of, what do you want? You know, and over time, over, you know, a period of weeks and months, he actually really came around to, wow, this is real. This is happening. And whether it's something that I ever anticipated in my life or not, it's true. And, yeah. And he was someone who, so I'm very, very lucky because he's an extremely kind and thoughtful person. And he was willing to embrace that truth and to meet me. And we've since, in these last couple of years, established a really unusual relationship, myself and my biological father and his oldest daughter, who is my biological half-sister. And I would not describe it as, he doesn't feel like my father. You know, right. My dad who raised me is my father. And my half-sister doesn't exactly feel like a sister. We weren't raised under the same roof. We were raised in different cultures and in different parts of the country and in different worlds. But yet there is a familiarity, like a really profound and powerful familiarity. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's no playbook for it. So it just feels like a special and unusual relationship that is kind of uncategorizable. It's not family, but it's something more than a friendship.
You have this really lovely passage in your book when you finally go out to lunch with your biological father and his wife, where you describe meeting him as feeling like you were kind of in your native country. Mm. And I just love that. I love that because it really seemed to perfectly encapsulate how you must have been feeling.
Mm. I'm so glad to hear you say that because, you know, as a writer, I feel like I often don't know exactly what I'm feeling until I find the language for it. Mm-hmm. And when I met him, I didn't initially have the language. I just was sitting at that lunch, you know, that table where he and his wife and my husband and I were having lunch. And I could hardly even look at him. It was like staring at the sun. It was so intense to see my gestures and my physicality and even aspects of my nature, you know, my constitution reflected back at me in someone that I had never met before in my life. And after the lunch, and it was a relief because we really liked each other. And when we went into the lunch, it was a feeling of this may be the only time we ever meet. And when we all left the lunch, it was with a feeling that we were at the beginning of something, that we would see each other again. But afterwards, in the days afterwards, I sort of became very sad and I couldn't figure out why, because the lunch, you know, meeting him had been so wonderful. And what I started to realize, and it was actually during a meditation where that language came to me, I realized he didn't feel like my father, which was a relief and also allowed my father, my dad, to sort of begin to return to me. It was the beginning of really coming to terms with what it means to be a father or a mother, to be a parent, to do the active loving and nurturing of parenting, which is, you know, which is what it's all about. And yet at the same time, I was seeing myself reflected in this other person. And what was that? And I was meditating one day and I was noticing in my meditation, oh, I keep on trying to form language around what I'm feeling. I started noticing that, and it was, he feels like the country that I'm from. He feels like my native country. It's not a country I've ever set foot in, but it's where I'm from. And that was so satisfying. It was such a relief to come to that. So I'm so glad that that spoke to you, because it was like a hard won little bit of knowledge. And that's really stayed with me. That's exactly what Ben Walden and the Walden family feel like to me.
Yeah, I thought it was just so evocative. I'd love to switch gears a little bit and talk about your podcast.
Oh boy.
So Family Secrets is a podcast where you explore, as you say, the astonishing family secrets and uncover the extraordinary lessons the truth can teach us. And this has been kind of a runaway success. And I'm wondering, was it a surprise that you were going to find so many stories like this?
The whole thing was a surprise. I mean, it began in this really organic way. You know, Inheritance was about to come out and people were telling me their secrets. And one day, actually, I was on the phone with Sylvia Borstein, who I had mentioned, who had read the manuscript. And she started telling me this extraordinary story. And she's a brilliant storyteller. And I was on the other end of the phone and like hanging on to every word. And all of a sudden, I thought, oh, I wish I was recording this. And the next thought I had was, podcast. I wonder if there's a podcast where people who have really thought deeply about their family secrets would, I could have conversations with them. And that's how it began. And there's so many things that have been surprising about it. But one of them is there isn't a single person that I've asked to be on the show who has said no.
Wow.
Not one. Nobody's been like, ooh, I don't know. I can't tell that story, or I'm not comfortable sharing. It's funny. There was one guest in the second season who we permitted to be anonymous because it was the only way that he was comfortable telling his story. So we gave him, a pseudonymous name. And afterwards, I got a little bit of pushback from listeners saying, this show is really supposed to be about owning and not being ashamed of your secrets. Why would you have had somebody on the show who wanted to keep his identity a secret? And I thought, you know what, you're right. And I won't do it again. Because there's something to me when I think of like, what's the criteria for like a good episode and an impactful conversation, is it's not about like the rubbernecking part of like hearing about somebody's family secret. I mean, the stories themselves, every single family secret is unique, even if it falls into the same basket. If it's beautifully told, if it's unpacked, you know, all the stories are unique. But, you know, in a deeper way, to me, it's about like what does it mean to live with a secret, then know a secret, then in the sort of aftermath of a secret. Like, you know, the tagline of the show is the secrets that are kept from us, the secrets we keep from others, and the secrets we keep from ourselves. And to me, I like to really unpack stories that are operating on all of those levels, because I think very often when a secret is kept from us, we are also in some way keeping it from ourselves. It's not like just because it isn't spoken, it doesn't exist. It's always there, and it's always shaping our lives in some way, whether we're conscious of it or not.
Dani, where can people find you if they want to read your work and kind of learn more about you?
Well, my favorite social platform is definitely Instagram, where I'm Dani Writer. That's just D-A-N-I Writer. And I'm on Facebook, Dani Shapiro. And my website, which is DaniShapiro.com, where all of my books are listed. Inheritance is the most recent one. And the podcast is on there. And and Family Secrets, wherever you get your podcasts.
That is the line.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And I hope you and your family stay safe and healthy, and that you can hug your husband and son again soon.
Oh, thank you. And to you too. It was really great to talk to you both, Dori and Kate. I'm a big fan.
Thank you so much. Yeah, likewise.
Likewise.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So we are going to be on Dani's podcast later this spring. So look out for that. So Kate, how is Intenshi's Land going for you?
It's interesting. So last week I wanted to venture into my garden, right?
Yep.
And you know what? Like day two or three of our quarantine, I went out there with my kids one afternoon, and I have this overgrown herb garden. I was like, I'm going to thin this out. It turned out like these herbs had grown almost 6 feet tall, like into trees. And we just hacked it. And I think I was taking a lot of stress out on this herb garden,
but we
hacked it to pieces. So now I have a beautiful empty planter box. I got rid of all the overgrowth, and I'm ready to, I need to like dig up some seeds and start planting again. So
ooh,
I kind of did it.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. And I also have just been doing like, I refilled all my bird feeders. Like I did, like, I've just been doing kind of like, I threw out the pumpkins from Halloween that were still on our front steps.
Oh, cool.
Which we had like six rotting pumpkins. I realized that Halloween was like 6 months ago. I kind of just slipped my mind. So I did some little like yard tidying, which felt very nice. And it felt lovely getting to be outside. It was really, it felt good. So I'm going to keep at it while we are in this time of quarantine. And I stole your intention, Dori. I did one new thing.
Tell me.
And I made Mark Bittman's No Need Bread from the New York Times, which we talked about on the first episode of our podcast, our other podcast, Here For You.
Yes. And you said it came out really well.
It was so great. It was like foolproof and wonderful. And my kids helped, and we ate it for dinner, and everybody liked it. And it was just delicious. Ugh. And I felt really proud of myself. So thank you for your intention. You encouraged me, that encouraged me and inspired me. And so there you go. I'm now a bread maker.
I look forward to trying some of your bread when we are out of quarantine.
Well, good, because my intention this week is a bread intention.
Go on.
Okay, so my friend Liz dropped off some sourdough starter at my house, and I would like to try to make a loaf of sourdough bread. Whether it's edible or not, I don't care. I just want to follow through because I tried to make the leaven part of the sourdough and I failed. So I'm going to start again tomorrow. This is a big endeavor for me, but I feel like, you know, I've got some time. And so I would just like to get it through to the cooking, like cook a loaf of bread and see, cook a loaf of sourdough. I love sourdough bread. You know, I've really kind of healed my relationship to bread in the past year, which I guess kind of sounds silly, but has been a big thing for me.
No, I hear you.
So I want to make some sourdough. That's my intention.
How can I just ask quickly, like, how do you mess up a sourdough starter?
It's not, I don't know. Dory, I don't know. First of all, the starter is not messed up. The starter is fine. You do have to feed it every night when it's not in the fridge, which is so weird to me that I'm like feeding this living creature.
Mm-hmm.
But I made the leaven and it didn't quite rise. And then I got like lazy and forgot about it. So I think the way I messed up the leaven was by like not doing it right. Like not doing it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I'm going to start again tomorrow when I have a little bit more of a free day, and just get to work. Try to make that loaf.
Great. I look forward to it.
Now, how about you? I did steal your intention from last week, but it was to do one new thing.
Yeah. So I did an online step aerobics class.
Where did you find it? Where was it located? YouTube?
It was on YouTube. I Googled step aerobics YouTube. and I found this really great, I think she's a great instructor. Her name is Jenny Ford, and she has a bunch of, she doesn't only do step, but she has a lot of step classes, that I've really been enjoying. and so that's just been great. I own a step. Like an old, you know, Reebok step. And so I kind of dusted it off and I've been doing some of her classes.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Highly recommend. She has classes from beginner to advanced, from, you know, beginner, basic, you've never done step before, to advanced classes. So.
And what are you taking? Like, where do you fall into that?
I would say I'm like intermediate to advanced.
Whoa, look at you. Okay.
And it's so funny because it like all came back to me so fast.
Yeah.
Just like being on the step, because I did step aerobics for so long. I really do enjoy it. It really is such a great workout.
Like in the 90s or like,
well,
in the aughts?
I did it in the 90s. There was a gym right by my elementary school that I went to in high school called Fitness Unlimited, in Brookline, Massachusetts. It was a women's only gym and they had step aerobics classes. And my friend Allison, who has been on the podcast, Allison Livingston, she and I we went to step class together. So that was where I started. And that was in the 90s. That was in like the mid 90s. And then in the aughts, at New York Sports Club, there was an instructor who taught step, and I think I've mentioned her before, but she had students who were like her groupies, and she taught at a bunch of different New York sports clubs, and people would like follow her from club to club, and I became one of those groupies, and I'm still on her email list.
You have mentioned this.
Yes.
I love this so much.
I left New York 7 years ago. But she's so great, and I've gone to a couple of step classes in LA and they just weren't the same. So.
Well, I also did a step class this morning.
I heard.
Yes.
Look at you.
I did it on an actual step in my backyard.
Oh, fun.
You know, got the job done.
Yeah. Hey, whatever works.
So what are you up to this weekend in terms of your intention?
You know, I usually shy away from saying I'm going to do something every day. But I'm shaking things up and I want to do a bedtime yoga routine every night. I've done it. I didn't do it last night because there was like podcast chaos in this house. But I did it the night before, and I did another time last week, and it's just like the nicest way to just like wind down at the end of the day. And Yoga with Adrienne has a few like 12 to 20 minute bedtime relaxation gentle routines. So I've just been like finding one of them and putting it on, and I want to do that every night this week.
Dory.
Mm-hmm.
And what made you decide to take this to like an every night level?
Because I think I need something that helps me wind down.
Yeah.
You know?
And yoga toes aren't it right now?
I mean, I'm still doing my yoga toes. And
okay, good.
I'm still writing my one line a day journal. And I didn't last night, but the night before and the night before that, I wrote in my actual journal. So that's been like a relaxing practice. I think I might need to like not use my iPad anymore. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't have social media on it. Like and I don't have my email on it. But it still like allows me to like surf the internet, and just in this economy, I just don't think that that's a good idea.
Yep. I'm with you.
So I might go back to Kindle only.
Well, I wish you luck in this endeavor. I think that sounds really positive.
Thank you. Thank you, Kate. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our show. Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dory Schreier and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. And Sam Reed is our project manager. And we will talk to you on this show next week, but you can still catch us on Here For You tomorrow morning.
Yeah. And don't forget, stay home.
Stay home. Be safe.
Stay home.
Stay healthy. Okay.
Bye.